Discussion of Truth. This is the second hour here. We've got Andy Thomas, slated to join the program here. We just ended with Dr. Michael Hall, Miami Beach. Very intriguing what he has done to fight for your rights, not only in the medical field, but civil. Look, yes, WIPO, W-I-P-O, World International Public Patent Organization is what I think it stands for. Just type it into your web browser. Type in WO 2020-060606. So this is fact, as far as I know. Okay, it's available on Google. Seems legitimate. It's been up there for a couple months. This is a Microsoft patent to run a cryptocurrency system off of microchipped human beings. You toss that in with the fact that Bill Gates is calling for digital identification and microchipping, one has to wonder. If you're in the United States, folks, is the Federal Reserve constitutional? Okay, so author Andy Thomas in his book, Conspiracies. I don't have a problem with anyone using the term conspiracy or conspiracy theory because all it means is that the person is pressing the fringes. It's published by Watkins. That's a publishing house out of London that's been around since 1893. Truth or fiction? Read the facts about the world's biggest conspiracy theories and decide for yourself. This will be the second time Andy is joining the program. Let's see if he's available. Ring him in right now. This is Discussions of Truth. I'm your host, Ian Hamilton Trottier. Calling English-based author Andy Thomas. Thanks for listening. Catch me Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard. Okay. Try his line here. Wait a second there. Okay.
Hello?
Andy! It's Trottier, Ian Trottier, Discussions of Truth, sir. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for staying up late. We know it's late for you, past 11 o'clock UK time. Andy, do you mind if I reconnect with you on Skype? I'll try calling you back on Skype.
Yeah, no, that's fine. No, we've obviously got the time wrong because I had it down as 11:15 and it's only 10:15 here. So we've obviously miscalculated the time. Can you just give me 5 minutes while I just swap over, yeah?
Absolutely. You call me when you're ready. Yep. Just call me on Skype. Okay.
I will. I will call you up as soon as I'm there. All right.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
No worries. Cheers now.
All right. This is author Andy Thomas, folks. This will be the second time he's joining the program. As I mentioned, his book, Conspiracies, The Facts, The Theories, The Evidence. Yeah, this might be my calculation. We had an issue with John Waters last week. John is a former mainstream journalist, if you will, based in Dublin. If you're not familiar with what he's doing, and this is what everybody, this is what you need to be doing, and that was, it was nice to have a Dr. Hull join us last hour out of Miami Beach and him talk about fighting for human rights, because this is exactly what's happening, folks. Whether you realize it or not, your rights are being completely trashed and washed away. Don't have a lock. I use the word trash because I couldn't think of a better term, a word to use in that term. But even look, Paul Craig Roberts, leading economist, former fellow at Oxford, former fellow at Stanford, highly intelligent human being, Joined the program now about 2.5 years ago, and he said on this show, look, he used to advise Ronald Reagan in the White House on the economics, if you will. He said on this program, he said, Ian, Americans, this is 2.5 years ago, he said Americans no longer have constitutional rights. It's a facade. It's a mask. You think you have rights. Yeah, well, the fact of the matter is, the rights are completely under attack. We're not censored in the way that the Chinese are censored. But we are heavily censored, folks. And it takes an event like a 9/11. Look, for me, it didn't hit. 9/11 came, and I was ready to sign up and join the military and go kill people. Wonderful decision, right? No, not a wonderful decision. I chose a different route. I don't believe in violence. I don't like guns. But I do support the fact if you want to defend yourself and you own a gun, put a gun in your house. I have no problem with that. I personally don't. That's my own opinion. But again, I don't have a problem with defending yourself. And you attack me, I will defend myself. Okay? We are under attack. We are under attack. I've been peeling the layers now for 3.5 years. I was invited to do this program via Wynwood Radio initially out of invitation. I never set out to do this program. I never set out thinking, okay, I'm going to start a weekly online radio program. I never had that inclination. I was invited to do this because of the research that I found in regards to the Zika and the Dibrom pesticides. Zika being a virus discovered in the 1940s, Uganda Forest, Rockefeller Foundation financed, and the virus or the pesticide for it, Dibrom, also engineered by Rockefeller scientists via the Chevron Chemical Corporation in the 1950s. Okay, we just had on Dr. Hall out of Miami Beach. He spoke extensively about his involvement to defend human rights. Look, it's an invasion of airspace. You get sprayed with a known neurotoxin. This is known out of studies out of Oslo. It's banned in the European Union. You get sprayed with a known neurotoxin. You're a pregnant woman, and you know that the fumes and the air that you're breathing in have a neurotoxin in it. You will go into a defensive mode, my guess. I would hear the crop duster buzz right over my head, 5 a.m., Miami Beach. That's right on Meridian Avenue, right there on the beach, center of the beach. I'd hear the crop duster buzz over my head after I read the studies, and I would smell this burn. I would smell this burn. I knew. Firsthand, I knew this was a very toxic gas being used against the people. For what? Like Dr. Hall said, there were no known cases of Zika. There's Andy, bringing Andy Thomas in, author of Conspiracies, published by Watkins, 1893, London House. Andy Thomas.
Ian, hello. Sorry about that. We obviously had worked out the time wrongly, but it's all right, as long as you're okay at that end.
I'm absolutely perfectly fine. It may be an issue on my end, Andy. Last week, we hosted John Waters. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's a former mainstream media journalist out of Dublin, and he's fighting the high court there.
Right.
Yeah, we had him on the program, and he and I had the time mixed up, so it might be something on my end where I'm miscalculating the hours.
Well, listen, never mind. I mean, I checked it as well. So I sometimes when you look at these time converters, they don't take into account sort of British summertime or whatever, you know, so maybe they assume that you're going to add that on. But anyway, there we are. Here we are. We're here now.
Andy, it's nice having you back on the program. Would you tell listeners a little bit about what you've been up to? Of course, we've got your newest edition of your book. We want to get into that. Conspiracies, published by Watkins. But give listeners a little bit of background about what you've been up to since the last time we've had you on the program.
I mean, one of the interesting things when you write a book or even give a lecture about anything, but especially the world of conspiracies and mysteries, is that nothing stays the same for very long. And I mean, you know, the book Conspiracies, which came out originally 7 years ago, it needed updating. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time looking at everything from Donald Trump to Edward Snowden to 1,000 different things that have happened since the last edition. And, you know, maybe we'll talk about some of that. And so this book came out just at the beginning of this year. And instantly, we had this pandemic.
Interesting.
And of course, instantly, there were thousands of theories about that. So, in fact, just in the last 3 weeks, I've written a whole new introduction, which you'll get on the Kindle edition of the book now, and eventually that material will go into the printed version. And I've written a very long article, which is now on my website, basically trying to get down to the bottom of what is going on now, because of course, you know, nobody can seem to get to the truth of what's happening. And as you know, there are thousands of different opinions, many arguments, and many people very worried that our freedom is being taken away, and we're not really fully understanding why. So, you know, that's really been the focus of the last few weeks for me, you know, I've been in contact with a lot of people, having lots of conversations, and trying to get a balanced view on what's going on. So that's where I'm at the moment.
Fantastic. So, Andy, you may not remember, I started the program in Miami because of the Zika virus. We just had on the last hour a medical doctor based in Miami Beach, and he gave his firsthand views on what's happening with COVID-19. But certainly when the Zika virus hit the shores of South Florida, and I got entangled because I felt like the folks democratically were not being represented. The corporations were forcing this pesticide down their throat, an invasion of their airspace. And so that's out of invitation, Windward Radio, and I was invited to start this online program. And like you're saying, almost 4 years ago now, three and a half, I never saw. But it's almost like deja vu having this COVID-19 thing come now globally, causing this global a pandemic. Now, John, it was fighting, and this is like you're saying, Andy, we're talking about having our rights taken away on so many different levels, and it's being disguised as if it is actually meant to help us. Let me mention something to you, Andy. I want to quickly insert this. I don't know if you've come across it yet. I'm finding that many people that I talk to have not found this yet. But there's an international patent, Andy, that Microsoft has just published, and it is an electronic software to run a cryptocurrency system off of mining microchipped human beings. What's your opinion on something like that?
Well, I mean, listen, microchipping people, that's something that's been a concern in the truth seeker world for a very long time. And it's worth noting, isn't it, that, you know, when people like David Icke talked about that 25 years ago, yeah, Everybody laughed. And are they laughing now? Not so much, because, you know, yes, there is a clear, I think, intention now to, well, effectively microchip us. Now, I mean, there's a lot of talk at the moment, of course, of there being potentially a vaccine coming in for whatever this thing is we're dealing with at the moment. And it's been openly discussed by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that it might well have a digital imprint, basically. So they will know whether or not you've had the vaccine because it will show up digitally. Well, quite a few people have pointed out reasonably, well, isn't that basically the same as a microchipping program? So where they say, oh, we're not microchipping people, of course they are. You've just given one example there of how it's almost coming in through the back door, as we would say here. And a lot of people are very worried that we're now being forced into a position where we're going to have something like that to function in society. And that is not a free world. And that is something which, of course, is of great concern. But if you talk about it in the mainstream, you will be accused of being a terrible person. You know, now you can't have a sensible discussion about anything that goes near the word vaccination because you'll be taken offline, you'll be deplatformed, and you'll be told you're an evil person. So we're now in a very strange position where, yeah, we've got very rich, powerful people telling us we must have this or we must have that, and suddenly we're ending up in a position where we cannot raise even reasonable objections. And this is not a wise world. But unfortunately, that's where we're going at the moment.
Andy, Ronan Palin, who's an economist out of London, he's co-written a book called Sabotage, The Hidden Nature of Finance with Alexandra Nestatavlova, I think is her name. They joined the program about a month and a half ago. And on the program, Andy, he said, Ronan said to me, I had asked him about I asked him about his views on the city of London. For listeners that aren't familiar with the city of London, this is a this is the actual city of London. It's a neighborhood in the metropolitan area of London, outside of like Westminster. So, city of London, also known as a corporation, it's its own sovereign neighborhood inside of what tourists consider to be London. In so much, Andy, and I'd like you to speak about this if you choose, in so much that the Queen must ask permission to enter this this neighborhood, whereas she doesn't have jurisdiction over it. And this has been the case since William the Conqueror in 1066, whereas William of Normandy was unable to conquer this neighborhood and signed a treaty to allow it to retain its own sovereign space. What is it, as an English person, as someone, certainly we are speaking your language, Andy. This is a language that we inherited from the founding fathers of this country. So there's certainly a close connection between the United States, the foundation thereof, and England. What is it, in your view, Andy, in your research, what's going on in the city / corporation of London? And I will insert this before you respond, if you allow me. Andy, he said that it was an archaic Roman banking mechanism. That was what he said verbatim on this program.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. That you've got two Londons. You've got London, the city, and then you have the City of London. That's what it's called, the City of London. And it is basically, as you've said, a completely separate state that exists in the heart of Britain that basically is untouchable. So it's a little bit like the Vatican in Italy. The Vatican is essentially its own country. It is not the same as the rest of the nation in which it sits. And the City of London is the same. It's very powerful. There are many tendrils that lead there from all kinds of financial institutions around the world. And, you know, although we might look at Britain today and say, well, it's not that big on the world stage compared to how it was, say, when it had the empire, make no mistake, it has huge influence. Now, that's not to say Britain, all the British people, but that is the financial institutions. And one thing you can be very sure of is that although now we've just announced today Britain's now in the worst recession it's been in, for a very long time, and that's likely to get much worse, the people sitting in the City of London will probably not come out of it too badly, because they are talking huge amounts of money, huge amounts of influence. And by the way, there is a fair amount of evidence that the financial markets around the world seem to know that the financial world was going to crash anyway. There's quite a lot of thinking which says that basically overlending, too much credit, they've done the same thing they did last time when it all crashed in 2008. But then, knowing that there was this virus around, or claims of the virus, it suddenly became very convenient to blame all the financial disasters on the virus. And that what they've actually managed to do is to evade responsibility. So they're saying, well, everything has gone wrong now financially. It's all because of the virus. But actually, there's a fair amount of evidence that it was about to happen anyway, if that makes anybody feel even slightly better. But they've managed to therefore shift the blame onto the virus. And that we've had economists even speaking on mainstream radio here just in the last few months before the virus arrived, warning of this. So it's not like it wasn't being talked about. Plus, we had the oil crisis, OPEC versus Russia. You know, that's taken oil down to its lowest prices in absolutely decades. That was a disaster in its own right, but it got completely sort of pushed aside by all the worries over the virus. So yeah, the people in the City of London and all the other massive financial institutions around the world, I think they know a lot more than they're telling us, which you can rely on, of course.
You've got a 300-page book written on various theories, conspiratorial in nature, published by Watkins, one of the largest publishing houses in London. You're renowned for diving deep into unexplained mysteries. Andy, we've had on program a high-ranking Canadian politician, Paul Hellyer. You've written a little bit about what's going on in Area 51. Listeners may be privy to Operation Paperclip, and that was German scientists from the Nazi regime, a few of them starting the NASA program in the United States. Paul has said, now I didn't ask him the question on this program, just because this is where you really start to get fringe, but he has said that he knows firsthand that the planet that we know of and identify as with being Earth and us being human beings, he has said that it has been infiltrated by an extraterrestrial species. What can you say? And again, you address in your book, via Area 51, but what can you say to that, Andy, in your research?
Well, I mean, Paul is a very important figure in all of this because he's one of those people that, you know, he's worked in high-ranking positions, very high-ranking, and he's one of a number of people who have come forward and basically said, you know, there are various governments in the world, especially the US, as you would imagine, that are in contact with beings from beyond this world. And I mean, the evidence is fairly overwhelming that at the very least, strange things are flying around. But, you know, they've managed to sideline this for years. You've got other characters that were part of the disclosure project, which has been running for years, like Colonel Robert Salas. Now, he was present in 1967 at the Mount Strong nuclear base in the US when an object, a flying saucer of kind, suddenly appeared, you know, in the sky above the base and effectively neutralized the missiles. Everything went offline. They couldn't get them to work. There are various tales very similar to that from around the world. Now, that has huge implications because that means we may well be dealing with beings that can actually shut off our weaponry and probably do incredible things. So, the question is, how long, therefore, can they keep hiding this? We all know about Area 51. They say it's just standard science stuff being tested there. But, you know, then you hear the claims and people like Bob Lazar. And even if you don't believe all the claims, very clearly they know far more than they're letting on. And we have people like the Mexican Air Force. They have gone public in saying there is definitely a UFO phenomenon that they cannot explain. And I do find it interesting that right in the core, right now, of when, you know, the world's been turned upside down, suddenly the US military is releasing new film and new documents about UFOs. Now, what's that about? Because if you wanted to really make the public think, oh my God, everything's going crazy, it's a very interesting time to do that instead of calming people down. So is that a distraction or are they building us up for something? And I know some people think we're being built up now for some kind of announcement, although I would say we've heard that for many years. But certainly, yeah, there's something interesting going on around that. There's a new sort of build-up of discussion around the whole idea of ETs and UFOs, and I don't think that's coincidence.
I think it's as a human being, it's these are questions that need to be asked. And again, Paul Hellyer is the high. I think he's now in his 90s. He's the highest ranking Canadian politician in Canada, and actually in the UK collectively outside of Prince Philip is my understanding. So we're talking about an individual that is incredibly well respected in politics. And also very well educated, and so when someone like that speaks out about something that can quickly be shunned as a theory, one must look into it. Andy, let's look at it from this standpoint. We certainly are all we've allowed this generationally. We are all enslaved, if you will, to the current economic system that we face. We've got drastic plunges in oil prices since the COVID-19 pandemic has started. Again, I had inserted the cryptocurrency angle. There have been other reports about in the United States introducing a nationally recognized on some level, minuscule be it, a cryptocurrency type system for Americans to bite onto. We have also inserted the Bank of England, which is a sovereign entity, banking entity to the rest of the Commonwealth, or the people that the Queen certainly represents. Again, distinguishing between the two. Could it be possible, Andy, in your view, that this health pandemic has been designed to be used to be a cog to help create a global economy or currency? Well, there,
yeah, I mean, this is certainly one of the views that. Whether you believe this is real or whether you believe it's a hoax, you know, we're not going to answer that today. But whichever way you look at it, let's say the virus is real. Okay, let's say it's real. It's being used to justify a complete reset of the economy, a complete reset of our understanding of what freedom and liberty is. And because, of course, you've got the fear factor there, and people right. do see people dying and suffering,
right.
people will go along with things that they wouldn't normally go along with. And you're absolutely right. Many people think that, you know, effectively by blowing the economy to pieces, you know, as I mentioned earlier on, although we're all going to suffer, you know, the people at the back end of this, and especially in the developing world, there's going to be huge deprivation, probably leading to conflicts through this, but we're all going to suffer. Whereas those at the tops of the glass towers, as ever, are going to come out of this very well. We've already seen, the market, sort of stock market players using put options to make enormous amounts of money right now while everyone's suffering, basically by betting on stocks going short of various companies which are now falling away. So, you know, whenever they sell something as a disaster, it's not a disaster for certain people, and they will come out of this very strongly. So, yeah, I definitely think at the moment that you've got something going on with the economy, and then, yes, then you get to new currencies, then you get to, the whole thing of one world government, which many people are worried about for years. And I write about this in the conspiracies book that, you know, some kind of unified currency would come along. And I think a lot of people had long thought that that would be some kind of paper money. But now we're in different times. And you've mentioned there cryptocurrency. You know, there's going to be something which is very sci-fi. It would be credits. And it would be something that doesn't have a physical existence. Indeed, the cashless society is nearly upon us. Because now, of course, they're saying, well, cash is always very unhygienic. You need to get rid of that. How about a cashless society? And that's something else, of course, which gives them far more powers of monitoring, far more powers of control. And we're all walking into this. Well, perhaps not the kinds of listeners that will be listening in today, but, you know, many people say, oh, yes, what a very good idea. We must give away all our freedoms, otherwise everything will go very bad. And people buy into this because they're scared and they're not aware of what the full issues are. And that is always a bad combination for freedom.
Let's shift gears here, because I think this is enticing to listeners anywhere. I want to visit briefly. In your book, you address Paul McCartney and Princess Diana, and those are two of the most commonly used names, I would suspect, globally. You've got a rock legend, and then you've got a royal legend. I want you to address both of those, because these are things that can be found in your book. Let's begin with Princess Diana. Was Princess Diana murdered in a staged car crash? And if so, how is it relevant to listeners today?
So Princess Diana, I mean, she is the British equivalent of the JFK conspiracy theorist. So, I mean, you know, she was a much loved character, and she was certainly not a straightforward character. Some saw her as championing, normal people. She split up with Prince Charles, and she started to give these interviews where she was sort of implying that she knew how the nation Britain was being run and that there were, quote, dark forces abroad. And it was beginning to edge into criticism of the royal family. Now, that's when many people thought, oh, is she going a bit far here? So when she then died in the car crash in Paris in 1997, you know, a lot of people, and I don't just mean conspiracy people, but a lot of everyday folk here and in some other countries said, that's very convenient. It felt almost like it was too easy. She'd been, you know, annoying a lot of people and campaigning against landmines. You know, she had, you know, arms companies not very happy. So there were lots of people that were, that would have benefited from her not being around. But all of that, you know, that's just theorizing. The question is there anything strange about the events surrounding her death? And that's when it does get weird, because yes, there are. And in the conspiracies book, you know, I go to some lengths to try to outline some of these, because when you begin to understand the anomalies, a bit like JFK, you realize this simply isn't straightforward. So, I mean, everything got blamed on the driver of the car that crashed, and we are told that he was drunk, except the evidence that he was drunk is virtually non-existent. Very few people have ever said that. He looks fine on the CCTV. The blood sample that apparently proved that he was drunk was not his blood. That's even been accepted in the mainstream. Now, they accidentally mixed up the sample with somebody else's, but they say they did further tests, and yes, he was drunk. But there are so many problems. His family, as the inquest was taking place, his family had been told he would not be blamed. And then when the inquest was announced, he was blamed. So you've got that strange aspect. You've got the strangeness of the fact that in the crash itself, there was a white Fiat, which is a, you know, an Italian car,
right,
which we know was involved because it left its white paint on the side of the black Mercedes where they died in. It sped off. The French authorities said they couldn't find it. The CCTV, the cameras in that part of Paris were all off that night, would you believe, for maintenance. So they said they couldn't trace it. But interestingly, a man called Mohammed Al-Fayed, who used to own the big shop Harrods in Britain, now his son Dodi had just died in this crash, because Dodi Al-Fayed was going out with Diana at this point. And Mohammed Al-Fayed wanted to know, reasonably enough, more, and he tracked down private detectives. And they found a man called James N. Danson, who did own a white Fiat, and the detectives thought it was probably him. Well, he said it wasn't, but shortly after being exposed, he was then found dead in another car. He had a hole in his head. It looked like there'd been an attempt to decapitate him. The car had been set light to, clearly from the outside, and it caught fire. And the authorities concluded that was suicide. Now, when you actually look at the circumstances of the death, believing that really was suicide is very hard. And yet these are the strange things that nobody seems to think is weird. We have Diana's letters. She wrote to her butler and said, there is a plot to kill me. These are all in the public domain, by the way. You can find them, you can read them. She'd also told her solicitor, Lord Mishcon, his name was, the same. I think they're going to try to kill me. So you've got all these clues, and then you've got all the very strange things about her death. And the list goes on. There are many, many things. In the book, I list a lot of other things too, which make people suspicious. That she was becoming awkward, it was now convenient to remove her. And it doesn't prove it, absolutely, but if you ask a different question, if you don't say, was Diana murdered in a staged car crash, but actually say, is there something strange about the way she died, the answer really does have to be yes. And there's many unexplained things about it, as you get in many classic assassination, you know, theories. It's the way of it. When there are unanswered questions, it's reasonable enough that people are going to want to know more about what's going on.
Andy, killed by Lee Harvey Oswald or not, in your view, as an Englishman, why was JFK assassinated?
I mean, now this is really interesting, because there's kind of more stuff coming to light about this more and more. So, I mean, JFK was much loved by some, not all. It was, you know, it must be said, but he certainly was, I think, trying to shake up the system. There is evidence, for instance, that he was trying to take back control from the Federal Reserve. He had certainly annoyed the mafia and was talking about trying to do something about them. And then, you know, you've got things like he has spoken out against secret societies. Well, you know, these are very powerful in all Western societies, you know, and sadly, you know, at the top, I'm afraid what secret society you're in is going to get you to the top more quickly, you know, if you're in the right one. You've got that. He'd also been basically proposing that Russia and the US work together on their space program. Now, we all talk about the space race, but everybody forgets that Kennedy thought that the way forward here was to basically, you know, work together. And he had also given an order to declassify, again, UFO information to the Russians. Now, not everybody was happy with that. So, you know, if you put all that together, plus everything that happened with Cuban, the missile, you know, crisis and all of that, again, a bit like Princess Diana, there were various factions that you could easily see would benefit from his removal. Now, that doesn't prove it, but again, then you look at the circumstances, and these are very famous around the killing, the shooting, and all the things that led up to it. It's very hard to believe that literally only one man was involved. And I think it's very, very clear, as I'm sure you've discussed on this show before, it's very, very clear that, you know, there's so much more to it than that. And again, that is why all these years on, the JFK arguments, they will not go away. And they won't go away over Princess Diana either, because there are just too many unanswered questions. And I think the hope always seems to be that all you've got to do is kind of let it fade into history and we'll all forget about it. And sadly, of course, many people do. But I don't think we should allow these things to be forgotten, because they can then always happen again. You know, if you don't nip it in the bud, if you don't say, well, hang on a minute, you know, this is a bit strange, then they could do it over and over again, which sadly they often seem to do, because they know that we all have short memories. So again, there's a lot about JFK in the conspiracies book, as you would imagine, but not just because it's classic history, but because it has a relevance to now, because you don't know who they're going to try and take out next that they decide they don't like. And if you can see the patterns of conspiracy history, and I try to draw attention to this in the conspiracies book, you then realize that you've got to watch out for it going on at all times, basically.
Yeah, you one can go to the Rockefeller Foundation and simply see that I think it was in 2013, that foundation published a 100-year forecast of what they want to see, the changes they want to see implemented in global healthcare. This is fact. So if you're thinking about that type of money, like Andy is saying, relevancy for the JFK assassination in the 60s is very pertinent in 2020. Again, if you are a holder of shares that dominate a major currency, like we're assumed the Rockefellers and the Federal Reserve do over the US dollar. And certainly, like Diana may have understood what was running that country. Does, therefore, Andy, does the Corporation of London, or be it the City of London, where the Bank of England is housed, does that represent the British people in your view?
No, I think they represent themselves. And I think that's the problem, is that they give the impression that, you know, when you call something the Bank of England, you think, oh, it's all our bank. They represent themselves. It's a closed world. They'll allow, you know, certain finance out because they have to, or the whole thing wouldn't work. But no, at the end of the day, they are a law unto themselves. And I mean, if you look at the symbolism of some of this, so one of the key financial buildings in London is actually outside of the City of London, interestingly, but all linked financially, and that's a place called Canary Wharf. And Canary Wharf Tower is one of the famous buildings of London now, and it's got a great big glass pyramid on the top. And there are all kinds of theories about the size of it, the geometry of it. It all relates to the Great Pyramid in Egypt. And certainly, you can't look at it and not think, hang on a minute, somebody's making a point here. You know, they're linking modern power with ancient power. And you've only got to drive around the City of London and look up. And the symbolism built into all the old buildings is packed with this. But of course, you have that in modern cities as well. Paris in France, especially the whole way the roads are laid out, some people think is in itself, you know, a kind of a mystical symbol which denotes power. That's true. Washington, you know, many other cities around the world. So I think the people in the know, the people that do join secret societies and do believe in the power of symbolism, they don't leave anything to chance. And they can't quite help themselves by letting us all know what they're doing through signs and symbols. And of course, once you know where they are, you begin to see them everywhere.
Hidden in plain sight is the phrase that's commonly used. And let's not forget that on the back of the U.S. dollar bill exists that exact pyramid that you're speaking of, Andy, in London. This pyramid that seems to resemble the Pyramid of Giza is still currently printed on back of the $1 bill. Novus Ordo Seclorum, which is a Latin phrase, New World Order. Speak for a teaser a little bit, Andy. Speak a little bit about the Paul McCartney theory in regards to the individual that we know as Paul McCartney may not actually be Paul McCartney.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really interesting one. So I use the Paul McCartney example in a chapter which is about, look, very divisive conspiracy theories. And it's something that's hard to come to an absolute conclusion to, but there are certainly some people that firmly believe McCartney died, the real McCartney, in a car crash in 1966. So this first got attention on a college radio station in America. And some of the people involved with that station claim the whole thing was a joke, they made it up. But then you start to find that if you look at the Beatles' lyrics especially and some of the record covers, there are these very strange clues that often seem to single out Paul McCartney. So if you look at the record covers, like for instance, their movie, The Magical Mystery Tour, and there is an album, of course. You know, three of them have got one colour rose. They're, I think, a white rose. Or he's got a black rose, you know, on Abbey Road, the cover where they're walking across the pedestrian crossing in London. He is not wearing shoes or socks, the others are, and so on. He often seems to be singled out, and some people think that this is symbolism, that in fact he died and the Beatles didn't want their careers ruined or were somehow part of some, you know, very strange psyops operation. And they went along with this and they got a replacement, and using plastic surgery and very careful selection of the right person with apparently even more talents than the original Paul McCartney, managed to keep this whole incredible edifice going for a few more years, but couldn't help themselves by trying to secretly let the world know. So you've got strange lyrics that refer to car crashes. There's a few of those. You've got A Day in the Life, famously, although that seems to have been written about a friend of theirs that was killed. But then you have another one, there's a song called Don't Pass Me By that also talks about a car crash and somebody losing their hair, and Revolution 9, yeah, you know, there's little comments in there about hitting a light pole, had to go and see a surgeon, all of this. So this is all very strange. What's that about? And then you start to think, well, I don't know, maybe this is just coincidence. But then you find the cover of the album Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and you see the drum kit where they stand around it. And if you put a mirror up onto the central logo on it, which says Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, if you put the mirror into the middle of it, you see the words, "One He Die," with Roman numerals. And some claim that it's in fact the date of the car crash when he really did die. Now that's where you start to say, whoa, hold on a minute. Now, that does feel a bit too weird. But does that prove the real McCartney died? Well, not necessarily. Some think that the whole thing was a way of selling records, that getting the rumor going was just a silly thing and adding in the clues, you know, because it created a mystique around the records and so more people bought them, which, by the way, they did. After the Paul McCartney sort of rumor went around that he was dead, apparently it was a real boost because people were buying the records to listen to the lyrics and to look at the pictures. Now, I mean, the problem with all this, of course, is what about the McCartney family? would they really not have noticed that this person they'd grown up with was suddenly a different person? So, I mean, you've got to get your head around how that could actually work. But there are people that do take this very seriously. And what they consider is this, that, look, it sounds like a joke. It's a funny little strange claim, but actually, it was a way of messing with the heads of people that really saw the Beatles as something wonderful. They were leading us into a kind of a whole new way of thinking, creating new music. But the argument is that actually by doing this weird psyops thing, it got soured and therefore very strange messages kind of messed up the heads of the people who thought that they were the next great hope. And of course, then it all imploded anyway when they split up in 1970. So it's one of these interesting things where you can't quite get to the bottom of it, but to say that it's absolutely nothing, that there's no story there, that's not quite right either. And so I use that in the book as a way of looking at the grey areas that come out of this kind of theorising. And it's a perfectly legitimate thing to look at because it really is fascinating.
And Andy, would that have any relevance with, what was it, 81, John Lennon's assassination in Central Park?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of theories about, you know, was he killed? I mean, again, you know, any famous person that dies, somebody will always say they didn't and they secretly went to live on a nice island somewhere. But let's assume he did die. The general view is he did, but there's many theories about, you know, why Mark Chapman did it. Was Mark Chapman a, what they call a Manchurian candidate? Was he being mind controlled to get rid of John Lennon? We do need to bear in mind that, you know, Lennon had been sort of in retirement for a few years, just raising kids and baking bread, you know. But before that, he'd been very involved with peace campaigning, anti-Vietnam, all of these things. And suddenly, of course, he was just coming back with his new comeback album, Double Fantasy, with Yoko Ono, who, of course, was his wife. So there is a theory that the authorities were very worried that he was going to come back to prominence and start to get, you know, very sort of campaigning again, a little bit mouthy, and that they just had to get rid of him. Now, this is the theory. And the only thing about that is that there are some anomalies around Lennon's death, but nothing too definite. It's certainly nothing like, you know, the McCartney theories. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, as soon as somebody dies in any horrible circumstance, if there's even the slightest question mark about it, you're going to instantly get theories. And this is the way of it.
Andy, you mentioned a Fiat being present in the Princess Diana a car crash. If we couple that with Dr. Palin's comment about the corporation of London being a Roman mechanism, is there any link that you've been able to make in regards to this curtain, this financial curtain that seems to be drawn on the British public and certainly on the American public by means of the Federal Reserve? Are there any links? We can say pyramid, Egyptian pyramid, but are there any links going down the road to Rome, from what you can see?
Yeah, I mean, there's no sort of secret that, I mean, if you look at, say, the empire, okay, so the British Empire, which has somehow or another managed to be the biggest empire in history. I mean, if you look at the architecture that it created, and London is still full of this, it's absolutely based on, you know, Roman ideals, huge pillars, you know, massive buildings like they used to make. It made a statement, you know, we're big in the world, we're making big buildings. And of course, America too, it followed the model. I mean, you know, you've only got to look around Washington. And then you see, again, buildings made in exactly the same style. So, I mean, yes, there is a statement being made in the architecture, unquestionably. Whether or not the financial systems that we have today are directly related back to Roman stuff, I think is another matter. But if you look at, say, Freemasonry or, you know, all kinds of organizations, you know, Kappa Phi Beta, Skull and Bones, you know, these are very powerful secret societies that aren't that secret because we know about them. But, you know, they use ancient symbolism. And I mean, Freemasonry adopted somewhere along the line ancient Egyptian symbolism as its kind of, you know, way of representing power. you know, that's how they saw it. And to be fair, that is not something which actually goes back that far. I mean, masonry that we know today is a few hundred years old. So it was an affectation, really, to use the Egyptian symbolism. But that doesn't mean it's meaningless. In the same way, I mentioned, you know, Canary Wharf Tower in London's got a glass pyramid. These things are not done for nothing. And the Romans, you know, they were an empire that many civilizations looked back to, and they wished to recreate that empire. And absolutely, the British used that. And we should bear in mind here the crumbling away of the British Empire, you know, which really finally ended in World War II. We, you know, were very financially damaged by that. That really was the moment when the torch of the New World Order, which, by the way, is a real project, you can trace it, it's verifiable, that's when it firmly passes to America. So, you know, although Britain is still involved in the New World Order, I think America is absolutely at the core of it. And so they took on the same kind of symbolism, the same kind of thinking. So, yes, from that point of view, there's a clear line you can draw. Whether there's an actual line of, you know, people handing down the torch from Roman times onwards, I'm a little bit doubtful about that. But certainly in terms of looking back to those times and wishing to gain the power that they had, I mean, in fact, the British Empire was much bigger than that geographically. Unquestionably, that's in there. And because the New World Order came out of the crumbling of the British Empire, it really is the replacement for it. And that's why there are certain things going on in the world today that only really make sense if you look at the geopolitics of them, if you look at this notion of somebody wanting to create a wider network of unified power, because the Romans did it. I mean, they had a Mediterranean empire, but it was the world that they knew. But they put a lot of power into very few hands and made it work, you know, remarkably well, considering still people want to do that today. So from that point of view, yes, the ideals are in there, even if there isn't a direct link.
So we've addressed a little bit about the infringement on individual liberty with the introduction of the microchip. You had brought in people that have been talking about this for a couple decades now, mentioning David Icke's name. Let's now, as we close out, Andy, we wind down. I'd like your thoughts. Again, conspiracies. Watkins Publishing is Andy's most recent edition of his book. 300 pages, very well written, very well documented. Andy, your thoughts, please. We currently now have the unfolding of the 5G network. We are all dependent in so many ways now on the internet and certainly what we know as our phones, iPhones or whatever it may be, whatever type of device one may have. With 5G moving into 6G and incorporating this global pandemic, Andy, is there a global governing elite controlling us from the shadows through fear, surveillance, and social manipulation?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately there is. There's no question there are very powerful bodies in the world. There are groups, there are organizations. I don't think they're always united. I think there are factions. I think they argue with each other. But nonetheless, you can certainly see threads. And I think by many different methods at the moment, we are having our freedom taken away. And at the moment, we're seeing this now very, very rapidly with, you know, with what's going on with the virus and the so-called necessary measures. But this was already happening. I mean, in the conspiracies book, one big thing that I added a lot into in this new edition was about the censorship, especially online censorship. It's gone crazy. And if anybody wants to go onto YouTube, you know, it's still there at the moment, ironically, look up a talk by me, Andy Thomas Censored. It's just called Censored. You'll find it on my website as well, which is truthagenda.org. Now, I gave this talk last summer, and it was looking at the way things were being taken off the internet. People were being deplatformed for sharing so-called alternative information or conspiracy information.
Right.
People were finding things are vanishing off of YouTube even before YouTube began to announce that they would take stuff down. Google search engines. I mean, you can search for things now that usually would have come up in the old days, you know, number one, number two in the search. You'd be lucky to find it on page five these days. They're getting pushed down. They're simply vanishing. This is censorship. But now, this is massively accelerated. And with the arguments about 5G, now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but just a few weeks ago here in Britain, there were some alleged, and I say that because it's not been absolutely proven, but alleged attacks on transmission masts by, apparently, people who were anti-5G.
Right.
Now, whether you believe that these attacks happened or not, because some think they were false flag, nonetheless, that didn't mean that we should all stop talking about 5G. But as a result, many media platforms said, that is it. We are now banning anybody discussing 5G conspiracy theories, as they call them.
Really?
Now, what's really scary is the language that's come in. If you listen to the BBC or major news networks over here, anybody now that questions 5G, even slightly, they are now described as lunatics, crackpots, deranged. I've heard all of these on mainstream TV and radio in the last few weeks. And of course, when you actually look at the people that do worry about 5G, many of them are not deranged. They are experts, medical professionals, scientists. There was a large body of them that actually did appeal to the UN just in 2017. Sorry, to the EU, not the UN, to say we really need a moratorium on 5G because there is evidence that it has a biological impact and we need to look at this. But all of that now, you can't talk about it. And things have now actually been actively taken off. Facebook will take down any post now, if they can find them, which directly question 5G or in any way link 5G to the so-called virus symptoms and so on. That is censorship, plain and simple. And the problem is, many people are going along with this and they are believing that anybody that questions the norm on anything now is an evil person, is a dangerous person, you know, a danger to public order and health. And it's really frightening how quickly this is accelerating, and we need to stand against it and we need to challenge these platforms because, okay, hate speech is hate speech. If somebody's putting out something overtly dangerous, okay, maybe you need to look at that. But a lot of this stuff they're taking down is not. It's just perfectly legitimate inquiry that they have now decided through the new orthodoxy that they don't want anybody talking about. And that's a dangerous world because we are really heading for the Orwellian world, for the Brave New World, Huxley world. We are heading into this very rapidly and it's happening now. And I'm still astonished at how many people don't see it. They don't understand what's happening. And our freedom, we've seen it vanish through the police states that have been set up to keep us off the streets in recent times. You've had your big protests over there, so people are aware of this. But it's something which is going to be used for a long time to control us. And not only control our movement, but control our thoughts and what we can talk about. And that's heading for a very, very dangerous world. So, yeah, I really recommend people, you look at this if you haven't spotted it already, and do something. Write a letter, speak out, do something while you can. Because at the moment, our ability to speak out is being crushed more and more every day. And that is a great concern. And I do raise that in this book. So even though the last few weeks, it's become a really crucial crisis, if you like, it was something already building up. And it's worth seeing the clues and worth seeing where it's happening all around us.
Yeah, it's we've got now protests down in Key West that have started in the past couple of days. So the word is spreading. It's a bit of almost an oxymoron using the internet to spread these messages, and then we've got mainstream media being so biased in so many ways in the United States. Andy, we've got to close up here. As we bring on author Den Bishop here to talk about healthcare reform in the United States. But I want to give you a moment just to leave listeners with your view of, you've already talked about speaking up, writing, just one final thought for listeners to leave away with. Again, author Andy Thomas from the UK talking about his latest edition of Conspiracies, published by Watkins out of the UK. Just a final thought here for listeners, Andy.
Well, don't give up, okay? Because I know there's a lot of stuff going on, and I've just covered that there, which is worrying, but that doesn't mean we should give in to fear, because there's a lot of evidence that we are controlled by fear. The global agenda seems to be to make us all so afraid we do everything that we're told. But every time you fall into the fear, of course, you're letting them win. So don't let them win. So, yeah, do what is necessary. Take a stand. Take the steps that you can to make a difference. But then keep some optimism, because they may not win. And the more people that stay optimistic and get out there and do things and say, no, I'm going to balance this with something positive, the less chance they stand if their agenda's winning. So don't ever think that they are all powerful, because they're not. And we need to remember all the people that govern us, they're only there because we all collectively allow them to be there. If everybody stood against it, it would fall apart overnight. So don't give up. Keep hopeful and get informed, and make sure that anything you are shouting about, you are really informed and that you know your stuff, because then you're a force to be reckoned with. And in the end, this will count for something.
Ladies and gentlemen, Andy Thomas, beautifully said, Andy. We look forward to bringing you back on the program. Keep up the great work.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Andy joined us. It was late. Both of us had the hour wrong. It was actually 10 o'clock his time. But nonetheless, 11 o'clock, 11:16, 32 seconds right now on my clock for him. We're wrapping this edition up, bringing on, I'm sure he is standing by to join the program, Den Bishop, Voter's Guide to Healthcare. I'll be right back with Den Bishop. Thanks for tuning in to Wynwood One. This is Ian Trache for Discussions of Truth.